it's fundamentals, right? And I'm kind of old school with this stuff. Maternity pen, colostrum, hygiene, those are the big hitters. And you know, you got to do your fundamentals with checking in on calf total proteins, either spot checking once in a while, or a lot of farms nowadays monitor all of them. When we go to troubleshoot those issues, if there are underperformance opportunities, then a lot of times it is hygiene related. So how are we cleaning up equipment? How are we cleaning up environment? And then the hygiene thing becomes, I think, the number one dominant player in the wet calf environment and feeding program as well.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Adiseo USA, producers of SmartAmine M and MilkPay.com. Mycotoxins can threaten feed and cattle performance. DSM Firmenich offers a portfolio of solutions to help mitigate the impact of mycotoxins in your feed. Asepsis, an ounce of prevention. With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, Smax Tech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Volac, unlocking ruminant potential through nutritional solutions for a sustainable future. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together.
Hello, welcome back to the Dairy Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Barry Bradford from Michigan State University. Today, honored to welcome to the show Dr. Scott Ernest, who is the Director of Technical Services for Proactive Dairy Nutrition. Scott, thanks for being a part of the show today.
Pleasure to do it. Thanks for having me.
So we haven't had a chance to meet before. I know you're on the other side of Lake Michigan from us. So can you give me a little bit of background on how you got into the dairy industry and how you ended up in the job you're in now?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up on the East Coast and got exposed to agriculture through my cousin's ranch. Went out to California for my undergraduate, studied immunology as a pre-vet student, and then came to Madison for veterinary school. And I was looking for opportunities outside of the classroom. Ended up spending a lot of time with a clinic just north of Madison, Lodi Veterinary Care. And I worked there for the first 8 years of my career and was developing more and more of an interest in records analysis and consulting, employee training, things that didn't fit quite as well into the general vet practice toolkit as they did into the consulting world. So in 2021, I made a pivot and joined a nutrition and management consulting group. Proactive is a group of independents operating in the upper Midwest. And I do technical services, support all the nutrition consultants in that group, and maintain a couple of farm relationships of my own as well. Get to see a lot of really great farms and right in the heart of the best place in the country to be dairying. So
awesome. So you went out to California. Did you go to Davis or where did you?
Actually, UC Berkeley.
Oh, wow.
Yep. So I was stuck in town for a couple of years there. And but it was a great program. It was really challenging. It really prepared me well for veterinary school.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't name anybody else who did an undergrad degree in immunology going into vet school. At least from my angle, that'd be a pretty nice background to have.
Yeah, I appreciate it in hindsight.
Asepsis, an ounce of prevention. Asepsis LLC is a Wisconsin-based animal wellness company focused on the development of state-of-the-art animal hygiene technologies. Our company's mission is to apply innovative hygiene solutions into animal agricultural and veterinary applications, improving the wellness of the animals with a focus on sustainability. We accomplish this through the continued enhancement of our chlorine dioxide-based technologies within a wide range of agricultural hygiene applications, from facility and animal hygiene to water treatment.
So, Scott, tell me a little more, if you would, about the consulting group you're part of, the Proactive Dairy Nutrition.
Yeah, so like I said, we're an independent group. We're not affiliated with mills or ingredient suppliers, but we really work hard to kind of look beyond just doing rations and look at the big picture with the farm, look for opportunities to take away barriers to cows taking in more dry matter intake. We really focus on forage quality and high forage rations, and we work with a lot of herds that are really pushing the envelope. The 7-pound solids goal seems to have rapidly progressed to an 8-pound solid goal for a lot of herds, and We do a lot of economic tracking to report back on income over feed cost and make sure that we're keeping up with the changing market and trying to get high performance at a in a way that's economical for the farms. And you know, so my purview is really things peripheral to the feed bunk. My teammates are doing rations and have their relationships out on the farm, and I keep eyes on a lot of things that are going on peripheral to the ration that could impact the way it performs.
Sounds great. So my understanding is that one of the key areas that you help focus on is the heifer programs. And that's, at least from my vantage point, been one of the biggest changes we've seen in the industry in the last decade, partly from outsourcing heifer raising becoming sort of the norm to people, I guess, right-sizing their heifer programs to not, you know, have too much of a pipeline. And now maybe needing to shift back the other way a little bit. What is your sense in terms of like how that's morphed as a part of the overall dairy management?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, when I came into the industry, I graduated from vet school in 2014, and sex semen was really starting to take off. I think what I saw with a lot of my clients was that guys had been in a position of never having as many heifers as they would like to have, a lot of them anyways. And sex semen really changed all of that. And I think since then, there have been other things that have really changed that, like better fertility in our cows and that the impact that's had on culling rates, overall better stockmanship and the impact that's had on cow longevity and culling rates as well. So we went from a world where you would just raise as many heifers as you could get your hands on to, oh gosh, we have way too many heifers all of a sudden. And then, like you said, right sizing and the whole conversation about raising the right numbers, that was a huge economic opportunity to a lot of dairies. But the thing that's really critical when you, you know, right size your heifer inventory is now you can't afford to take any of them for granted. Every single one of them has to turn out to be a quality replacement if you're going to raise exactly what you need. So hopefully when you're doing those estimates to figure out how many heifers you want to raise, you don't have to build in too wide of a cushion for losses along the way, but every dairy is different in that regard. But that's been a huge part of it, is figuring out, okay, where do we have inefficiencies in the system? Where do we lose potential replacements? And then I think the other snake in the grass is, just because we have them doesn't mean they're good ones. So making sure that we don't raise any that turn out to be poor performers. That's maybe the only thing more expensive than losing them along the way.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. We're having this conversation about midway through 2024, and the data I've seen for this year to date, we're down in dairy cow slaughter by about 10% in a year with maybe the highest cull cow prices that anybody alive today has ever seen.
Right.
So that's pretty amazing, isn't it? It tells you something about the heifer pipeline, I think.
Yeah, and I think a lot of dairies that used to be buyers have really figured this riddle out and now are in a position to not need extras, or a lot of them are able to sell extras at a time when demand for replacement animals is really high. So obviously all these things are linked, and supply and demand are driving a lot of that cull price. So,
you know, as you mentioned, you see variation across farms in the non-completion rate. Well, can you define that term first of all? And then, you know, what do you see? What are the best to the worst ranges?
Yeah, so non-completion rate, or slippage rate, I like to call it. You can look at different time points. So a lot of my reports will have slippage rate on it, and that is the sum of everywhere along the line that you could lose a replacement before she reaches maturity. So to get into that, that would be your stillborn rate specifically for dairy breed female replacements. And then add on to that non-completions in lactation zero. I usually break it out as birth to weaning and then weaning to first calving. So you can have your, you know, your calf scours, your pneumonia, things like that predominantly in your younger animals. And then you get into reproductive challenges with animals that either don't breed or get pregnant and then abort, or, you know, feet and leg problems or injuries actually are quite common in heifers between a year old and first calving. And then also your first lactation sold and dieds. I'm always really careful to comb out, you know, dairy sales from those. I have a number of clients that sell high quality dairy replacements to other farms, and we're not going to penalize them for those losses. Hopefully they're making a good profit on those. But animals that leave that you didn't hope would leave. Basically we carry it out to that second calf being delivered. That's roughly the point where you'd say, okay, we've got an animal that is in the black now. We're profitable on that animal's lifespan. So that's the slippage rate. Kind of the sum of a couple of different time points of non-completion. And, you know, every dairy has some level of this. Nobody runs 0% stillbirths. I do see some dairies that can keep their stillbirths under 2% year round. You know, in general, you'll see industry goals of less than 5, but the ones mm-hmm. that really manage maternity pens well and are paying attention to calving ease and things like that, I think less than 2% is a good stretch goal. And then, you know, with calf losses, low single digits are becoming something that I see more and more commonly. One of the big mistakes we made as an industry when we could have as many heifers as you could possibly dream of is guys stuffed their calf barns full. And then I even saw a couple of farms start weaning heifers earlier and earlier to try to jam more in behind them. And I kind of came to the belief that every facility has a maximum carrying capacity for how many quality replacements you can make. And it really doesn't matter how many you try to put in. You're only going to get so many good ones out the other end. And over time, we've learned, okay, we don't need to jam them through. We just need to do a really good job with the right number of them. So low single digits, but it's not uncommon to see dairies that lose 5 to 10% of pre-weaning calves. And I think if you look at the NOMS data and some other things like that, that's supported. So, you know, if you're losing 5% as stillbirths and then you're losing 5 to 10% as pre-weaning calves, you know, then you might have a heifer or two abort or not breed. And then you'll see anywhere between, say, 15 and 25% or even higher culling rates on first lactation.
Yep.
So these numbers on some dairies will easily build up to over 50%, whereas the best performers will be under 30. But that's the percent of animals that never make it to break even in your program. And depending on what stage they exit, you will have more or less money stuck into them. Obviously, if a calf dies at 30 days old, you've got 30 days worth of milk and vaccines and care into her, but it's not a, you know, she's not a $2,000 or $2,200 heifer yet.
Yep.
The most expensive time point to lose one would probably be in the maternity pen at first calf, or perhaps one that hangs on halfway through first lactation before you realize that you're losing money on her. You know, some of those ones you might get salvage value out, but they can really be a drag on the herd in the meantime. So these ones that are non-achievers once they calve, or that, you know, take every input all the way to that first calf, get very, very expensive.
Yep.
But either way, you know, you have to, rather than thinking about the best case scenario of what a heifer costs you to raise when things go well, you've really got to bundle all of your expenses for your entire heifer program and divide them up by not the number of heifers that you tried to raise, but the number that you successfully raised. And your average cost to raise a heifer really has to bear the expenses of the ones that didn't make it as well. So I think more than any one, you know, product or intervention that you could take on in your program, the most expensive part of raising heifers is the ones you lose and the way they impact the average cost of the ones that you did successfully raise.
That's a really good point that I don't hear many people make. And I think in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years, a lot more people have gotten their head around what the real cost of a successfully raised heifer is. And I hear a lot of numbers like $2,300, something like that. That's reasonably well thought out. But if you do the math the way you're talking, you know, in accounting for salvage value, if you have to cull a heifer, what are numbers that you come up with more often?
Yeah, it's different on every dairy, right? And yeah. I think, you know, I don't want to put a benchmark number out there to say that it's one size fits all. There are a lot of give and takes, and there are a lot of fuzzy numbers that you have to grapple with there.
Yep.
You know, I don't think there are too many dairies that have employees punching a time clock every time they shift from one role to another across the farm, or keeping track of fuel as machines move from one activity to another. But it's something that every farm needs to do the best they can to try to capture that. And it's something that I also think you're going to capture that at a point in time. And it's a 2-year process to raise these animals to when they first start milking, right? So if you look at the price of the feed ingredients today versus 2 years ago, you know, these heifers have been through a big roller coaster, and which feed price are you going to use? I mean, the most anal retentive accountant might actually go through month by month and say this was the feed bill for this month that they lived through, and, you know, do it month by month or week by week. That's probably a little bit much for most people, but you do need to grapple with this number and have an idea of how it changes over time. And don't get trapped into assuming that today's price will be valid 2 years later. There is a little bit of gambling that goes on here when you choose how many you're going to raise and what you think you're going to be able to do with them later.
Yep, that makes sense. Well, we're talking with Dr. Scott Earnest today about heifer programs. And if this is of interest to you, be sure to hit that like button so that others can see this show and follow up on it. So Scott, one of the points, I guess the clear point so far that we've covered is a big variable in your true heifer program costs are the slippage rate or the non-completion rate that you talked about. So I guess rather than spending huge amounts of time trying to nail down what a certain farm's cost is, maybe the most effective thing is to ask, you know, what's the two or three biggest things you see that people do right to improve that completion rate to, you know, to drop the effective cost of the heifer program that way?
Yeah. So I think it's fundamentals, right? And I'm kind of old school with this stuff. Maternity pen, colostrum, hygiene, those are the big hitters. And, you know, you got to do your fundamentals with checking in on calf total proteins, either spot checking once in a while, or a lot of farms nowadays monitor all of them. When we go to troubleshoot those issues, if there are underperformance opportunities, then a lot of times it is hygiene related. So how are we cleaning up equipment? How are we cleaning up environment? And then the hygiene thing becomes, I think, the number one dominant player in the wet calf environment and feeding program as well. So I really like to look at what are the best products we can have in there for cleaning, and making sure we have clearly spelled out SOPs for how we're going to do it that include verification steps. So a lot of the protocols I've written, both when I was in clinical practice and if I have farms ask me to, you know, work with a veterinarian of record on the dairy for herds that we're working with on a consulting basis, I look at it sort of like cleaning a parlor, right? You've got your alkaline steps. In some cases, you might need an acid step, but the contact time is a big deal. The pH of chemicals is a big deal. And water temperature is a big deal. And all those things are measurable and they're documentable. I'll give you an example. We could use a foaming alkaline detergent for cleaning up, tubers used for colostrum, delivery equipment, calving chains, handles, things like that. I would say, you know, we want to have that at a pH of at least 11 or higher. And we want to have at least a minute of contact time where we're in there scrubbing with that equipment. And I really like to challenge employees to sign their name to what they do or sign their initials to what they do. And to really document some of those key checkpoints. So it's not just, here's the protocol, we teach you once and then it goes in a file and we never talk about it again. I like to, you know, put it right there and ask people to initial that's how they did it every day, and give them ways that they can check to verify that they're doing it the way that it was intended and the way it's going to be effective. So, you know, something like a chlorinated alkaline detergent, a rinsed up chlorine dioxide hung up in a clean place, and then empower people by both asking them, did you complete the steps, and asking them to, you know, qualify how they think things are going. So a lot of it with these little detail steps that are, you know, so simple, it becomes about compliance. It becomes about people cutting corners or people really taking pride in their work. And especially as dairies have gotten bigger, that's a big part of the assignment is convincing these people to, you know, all the employees, all the team members to do things correctly and making sure they understand why we want to do it a certain way and making sure that they take pride to signing off that it's their area and they did it right.
Typical fresh cow incidence of clinical hypocalcemia is 3 to 6%, while subclinical hypocalcemia affects 50% or more mature cows. Based on cutting-edge research, Exelite offers a new approach that is build effective and the ZDUs. For more information, visit www.protecta.com.
I'm curious if you've worked with some farms to try to enhance their hygiene program for calves. Are there a couple of things that you typically see right away, like scours incidence drops dramatically, or what do you typically expect?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest one, and I've got an anecdote for you on this. You know, a lot of people use hot pressure washers for cleaning calf barns. And it just is something that I've always struggled with, because if you walk into a calf barn when somebody's using a hot pressure washer, there's a cloud of warm, wet mist throughout the barn.
Yes.
And one of my herd health clients years ago, they would always do this, and they had a big calf barn that they would fill in a circle. So they were always, you know, there were always young calves in the barn as older calves were getting weaned. And when they would pressure wash the pens that had just gotten emptied out, I mean, they were getting white plastic, you know, shiny white. They were getting stainless steel, shiny, you know, shiny silver. But in the process, these billowing clouds of cryptosporidium, laden moisture were flowing around the barn and blanketing the newborn calves that were 100 yards away, right? Even if you're not directly overspraying and splashing the stuff around, that mist is just full of fecal bacteria.
Yep.
So as hard as, you know, as much time as they were putting into cleaning, they were really distributing a lot of pathogens around. So we went into that farm. It took quite a while talking about it. Eventually, I actually laid on my hands and knees in the center aisle of the barn and took a video and showed it to them. You could see this cloud just rolling across the barn from one side to the other. And I think that finally sold them on the idea of, okay, this stuff is actually traveling in the opposite direction of the direction the guy's spraying, right? So we switched to using a foaming product that they could apply with a scrub brush, again, an alkaline product that would really dig in and remove organic matter. A little bit of elbow grease, but also a whole lot of letting chemical technology do the work, right? Letting that alkaline action break things down. And, you know, if you're using a brush and a foaming product, you're not going to be throwing it to the other side of the barn unless you're really, really having a good time in there. You know, we do that. We get everything rinsed down with a low pressure stream, and then use the chlorine dioxide to get a disinfectant step for anything that does remain once most of the organic's been removed. That's been hugely effective, and we did see a major drop in scours. Right behind that, when you take out scours, you lose a lot of the pneumonia. A lot of the calves that get a low-grade case of pneumonia at a very early age are susceptible to that because they've been struggling with scours pathogens. So you take away a little bit of the loss of immunity that comes with being a scours calf. And that sort of, you know, flows back upstream then, that if you have less scours, you have less pneumonia. If you have less pneumonia, you have less non-completion. You have fewer poor doers that grow inefficiently. Ultimately, we see this manifested in average daily gains and with size at first breeding, size at first calving. and first lactation milk production, I think you can connect the dots from one of those to another. I don't have an academic study that shows if you clean better, you'll have more first lactation milk, but I do have a load of personal experience to say, I know this leads to better average daily gains, and we know what that does for milk production as a mature animal.
Our Yeast 40 is a natural biotechnology from ICC designed to boost the health and productivity of animals under challenging production systems. Our Yeast 40 performance is supported by an unique processing technology that results in a pure product containing high levels of beta-glucans, MOS, and yeast metabolites. These factors, combined, promote the ruminal and intestinal modulation, helping the animals to reach their full potential.
And that's cool to think about that, right? The way you talked about the slippage rate at different stages, you know, you could theoretically see a really nice reduction in first lactation culling for low production that goes all the way back 2 years to, you know, better hygiene in the calfhood stage, right?
Right. So, you know, to really win people over on this and to really encourage employees to take it seriously, I think you've got to come up with measurables that you can show them and explain those connections, and to be able to say, look, we are, you know, losing half as many calves out of the program as we used to, or we're seeing, you know, heifers that weigh more by the same age at first calving. You know, ultimately, what we're all after has nothing to do with calves. It has everything to do with making milk in the most cost-effective way possible, right? But a lot of the role players along the way, you know, their world's a little bit more confined. So they just need to think about get the calves through this early phase, you know, without setting up tripwires that are going to catch up with us later. It's amazing how much some of these things that get set up early in the calf raising process will manifest later. And I think, you know, all the work that's been done with long ultrasound out of UW the last couple of years has really, really shown me that there are problems that are set up in calves that are only 2-3 weeks old that if left to their own devices will manifest when they're 5 months old. But we can trace back to the root of the problem. And I think that brings up a really important point with the slippage rate. If a dairy looks at the slippage rate and says, oh my God, how can we be, you know, selling so many of these animals? We got to stop selling animals. Well, that's not the answer, right? It's not that we're selling perfectly good animals. You always have to, you know, you can't treat the symptom. You've got to go back and look for the root of the problem. And usually for me, that's going to trace back to young calves. And then a couple of the crucial transition points, you know, switching from milk to grain and then from grain to forage. Those are really critical time points in the calf's life where we can run into problems. And if we keep those smooth and well-managed and pay a lot of attention to them, we really avoid a lot of the other problems later.
So one other quick question on motivating employees. You know, you go to some farms and they'll actually pay bonuses to people who work in the parlor for hitting somatic cell targets. Have you seen anybody do that with sort of metrics in on the calf side?
You know, I've seen farms try all kinds of different things. I'm a big fan of just rewarding people for good outcomes by giving them the responsibility. And like I said earlier, let them sign their name to it. Let them really take ownership of it.
Yeah.
The problem with specific goals is that guys find ways to bend them. You know, the classic example people talk about on the dairy is you tell people, we don't want to have a lot of cows sold less than 60 days in milk. And then the first thing you have to start watching is how many cows are sold between 60 and 90 because, you know, people learn.
Or death rate for holding cows too long, right?
Yeah, I get a carrot if I, you know, wait till 61 days in milk to sell them. And we don't want to set up things that can pervert the intent of things. But I think, you know, if you create a culture where the success of the dairy is everybody's success, and that's frequently talked about, the biggest trap is probably only engaging with employees about performance when there are problems. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to make sure to be having the conversation when it's going well, even if there's nothing that needs to be changed, just to honor the fact that it is going well and that a lot of people did good work to make it so.
I agree. Excellent.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Our Yeast 40, ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together and the first ingredient in animal diets. Priority provides a more cost-effective and easier approach to nutrition. We recognize that not all bacteria are created equal. The specific strain truly matters. Priority IAC selects unique strains to provide the best performance in animals, and that's why we call these strains smart bacteria. Founded by Richard Brunig, helping to improve animal health one herd at a time.
It's time for the three big questions we throw at everybody. Looking forward to these answers from you. First of all, what's your favorite dairy-related book or resource?
So I try to keep up on Hordes and Progressive Dairy, and also the Miner Institute newsletter is one that I always like to read.
Good tools. All right. What about your favorite book or resource outside of ag?
Yeah, so anything by John McPhee. He's my favorite author, kind of an older one, but writes a lot about people and systems and natural events, and I find his writing just fascinating.
Nonfiction then?
Yep, nonfiction. Okay. Nonfiction. He sort of started out in geology, but like I said, he writes a lot about people and ways we interact in the world, things that you wouldn't normally see, but are going on in the background all the time.
Okay, I'll have to look him up. I wasn't familiar with him. All right, last question then. In your opinion, what sets successful dairy professionals apart from those who are not as successful?
I think it's peripheral vision. I think it's going out of your way to look at things outside of the scope of your normal day. It's, peeking in the parlor when you're done with the preg checks. It's paying attention to the people who are going about their role separate from what you're doing, but, somehow interrelated, trying to see the big picture.
I like that. That's a unique answer. I haven't heard that one before. Good. Well, again, Dr. Scott Ernest, thank you for joining us today. Enjoyed the conversation about calves and heifers, and definitely I think the audience will learn a few things that they can take away from this.
Very good. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, that wraps up another great episode of the Dairy Podcast Show. Huge thanks to Dr. Scott Ernest for sharing his insights on calf hygiene and strategies to optimize heifer development. If you're interested in calf hygiene, check out the solutions Asepsis provides. Be sure to follow or like the show so you don't miss the next episode, and we'll see you next time.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.